When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Today on I Should Be Writing, we're going to be talking to Rebecca Ross, author of A Fire Endless and many other books, and Epiphanies and the End of the Year and Burnout and all of those things that are on my mind anyway. But yeah, I don't know what the number is, and I keep saying that, and Summer keeps saying, what number is it, Mer? And I don't remember, but we're at the end of season 18. That's all I got.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next.
So hi there, welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is a live stream and podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty, here to help you along your author journey. I've been writing professionally since, I guess, 2011, been publishing online since about 2006, and still going. My latest book, Station Eternity, came out in October. And I'm currently working on the follow-up to that called Chaos Terminal. So that's me. Welcome, Rebecca Ross. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I was, when reading about you, it was just like, you're like the perfect guest. And I don't want to say why specifically, but there's something about reading your bio. And I'm just like, I am so glad to have you here. So we will get to that in a moment. Like I said, to keep myself accountable, I've been working on my book. Yesterday I had the epiphany of there's something about working out and writing a really good chapter that makes you feel so good when you're done. But there's still the inertia of getting started. And we can never let... I was calling it Mer A and Mer C. I don't know where or who Mer B is, but it's like Mer A is like, I don't want to do any of this crap. Mer C says... I've done the things and I feel great, but they don't talk. There's no message. There's no, like, if there is a message, Mer A is like, yeah, a new phone, who dis? I don't, you know. So, I finally got back into the groove of writing this week and it felt great. So I need to remind myself that that is something that I can benefit from. And the good news is, again, dog's doing good. Dog had surgery on Tuesday. Today's Thursday. She's doing very well. She had her second knee replaced, and she's doing a lot better than she did the first time she got a knee replaced. I don't know if she's just used to not being able to walk well or what, but she seems perkier and moving about better, and I'm hoping the recovery will be easier than it was the first time around. So that's a happy thing. If you guys have good news, put it in the chat. I would love to hear it. Remember, if you have had a rejection lately, we do celebrate that because rejections mean you're a working author. And no, we don't deny that they suck, but there is that silver lining. People who don't get rejected are probably not submitting and probably not working on their careers. Or they're John Scalzi, but he's an outlier. I have not set up the counter. We have, so far in 2022, 384 rejections in our team rejection count. And I am so very amazed and happy for you guys, because that means you're working hard. And that's pretty amazing. Shards has a new cat. Amazing. Name is Patches, and she likes to purr. Excellent. Excellent news, Shards. Rebecca, do you have any good news you'd like to share? If you don't, that's okay. But I didn't want to let you leave you out if you did.
I honestly, just having the book published last week, yeah, was a pretty big thing. With this book in particular, we got a little bit behind schedule. So River Enchanted, the first book came out in February, and we always had the plan to do a fast track publishing schedule with the books. But we got a little bit behind, so I had to work really, really hard on a very tight deadline to get A Fire Endless to be able for it to publish in December. It's like, I really want it to, you know, be able to publish the same year. Yeah. So I think just seeing the book come out in the world last week was just like, I can't believe, like, it finally happened. Like, it's here. So, just, I don't know, feeling very excited just to see it out in the world.
Excellent. Yeah, that is a good feeling. I'm amazed at the putting out a duology in one calendar year. So that's pretty amazing. Let's see. Preemie got a rejection for writer in residence position. I'm sorry, Preemie, but you know what? You tried for it, and that's probably not something I have the courage to do. So well done. That's amazing. Yeah, I applied for a grant for a podcasting grant earlier this summer and got rejected. So I got to add my rejection to the pile. Daniel's 2 books away from reading goal 50 books this year. Awesome. Preemie got a very nice rejection. Good. Underpoke, 3 rejections since last week and sent in your 100th submission for the year. That is amazing. Please put some yay buttons in the chat for Underpoke because that's just... that's working hard, man. That's amazing. And there's the third. Why is it... the bot is not counting. Why is the bot not counting? All right, bot isn't counting. I will make a manual note and make it do its thing later. Oh, wait. It didn't hit start. I'm so good at this. Yeah, bot's already on year-end break. Oh boy, I'm so sorry. Nope, that's still not working. Okay, well then, we're moving on. We'll add the number. I believe we have, that's 4 with Preemie and Underpope for rejection. So I wrote that down. We'll get it in the, we'll get it in the show notes. That's 388 rejections for 2022. Rebecca, thank you for being patient with my technical difficulties.
Totally fine.
Anyway, first, let's talk about the duology. You just finished it up. You started, when did A River Enchanted come out?
So it came out February of this year.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the series and then tell us why the calendar year was so important for you guys.
Yeah, so A River Enchanted, for those of you who don't know, I've previously published 4 young adult fantasy novels. So A River Enchanted is my adult fantasy debut, and I sold it as a duology. And one of the reasons why, you know, we wanted to have both books come out this year, or we had planned it. I remember I sold the series in 2020 of March, like right before everything shut down. So I have this very clear, vivid memory of like, I was sitting in a Greek restaurant with my mom and my sisters, and probably the last restaurant I was in for a long time, but I got the deal, and I remember accepting, oh yes, like let's do the deal with Harper Voyager for 2 books. And so we planned for them to both come out this year. And I think with just A Fire Endless, it ended up being, first of all, it is kind of hard wrapping up a duology, especially their, you know, River Enchanted had 5 points of view, so I had quite a few characters. And so I was like, well, I'm having to weave everything together, like bring everything to the end. And so it's my longest book to date. And then again, just getting behind schedule a little bit. So I had to do my like developmental edits and my line edits back to back in like a month and a half. And so, I just remember feeling like, oh my gosh, like, I hope like I can, you know, I want to, the book had to get to the copy editor at a certain date. And thankfully we like made it right in time. But the problem was we couldn't bump the book. I think normally you would just be like, oh, if we can't hit a deadline, we'll just bump the book a few months. But I have my next young adult coming out in April of next year. So I would have literally had to bump A Fire Endless to after that book. So it would have been, you know, about a year and a half before people got to finish the duology or read the conclusion. And then I'd have another series ongoing. So it was just one of those things where, I had to work extra hard to get everything done, but I also had a lot of support from like my agent, my team, which I was really appreciative of. And I honestly just am just so happy. Like both books, you know, they really, I didn't know what to expect, like coming over to the adult side. I was like, well, like, you know, it's kind of a whole new territory, yeah. a whole new ocean to be swimming in. And I've just been really, really happy with how the books have done. I feel like they have reached, really done way more than I thought they would. Let's put it that way. So it's just been really neat to see like new readers discover the books.
That's great. So I'm sorry if I missed it. Did you have the duology completed and you just had to do all the rewrites, or did you sell... no, wait, if you sold on 2020 and then published on 2022, you probably had to write at least one of them.
Yeah, so River Enchanted was fully drafted.
Okay.
And I had started working on A Fire Endless, I think just so I could kind of know, because I'm a discovery writer. So it's like, let me go ahead and get started on this before it sells, so I kind of have an idea about where I'm going, in case an editor was asking, what do you see for the second book? And
yeah.
so... but I definitely had to, I did so many extensive revisions for River Enchanted that I definitely had to just start from scratch in a sense with A Fire Endless. So, yes, it was, I feel like I was always trying to like a little bit behind with that book. Like, oh gosh, the book's due. Like the first draft was due at a certain time. And I was like, I remember just like crunching, trying to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And I think honestly, the pandemic really changed a lot about how I worked, because in the past I could, I love drafting and I could write really quickly and I could have days where I'd sit down and write 10 pages easily. And then I feel like ever since the pandemic, it's been a lot harder. Like I want to sit down and write 10 pages and I only write three.
Yeah.
And so I think I've had to really just not be too hard on myself and just be like, you know what? Like there's just a lot going on in the world and there's a lot in my mind and it's okay if I only write three pages.
Yeah. No, I know a lot of people, it's like, the whole Brandon Sanderson Kickstarter thing, there's a lot to unpack there, but I think one of the biggest things for me was, how did you write that much? I had my book, Satiety Eternity, was pushed back because I couldn't write a lot, and what I did write was not very good, because like 2020 was not a lot of writing. And as I struggled through to write, and then 2022 was a lot of revision, a lot of sending drafts back and forth. And it was bad on a lot of levels. But I'm really glad you got it out. Tell us about the book itself. What are we dealing with here with these elementals?
Yeah, so A River Enchanted and A Fire Endless, they are about... this grumpy bard named Jack, who is called home to, this island that he grew up on, that he's been away from for about 10 years studying music on the mainland, but he's called home and he believes it is an order from his lair to bring his harp and return instantly. So Jack has to drop everything he's doing and returns, and come to find out it's the laird's daughter, Adara, who has summoned him home, which he isn't quite happy about in the beginning because the two of them never got along when they were children, but, she needs his help. And solving a mystery as why young girls are going missing from the island and from their clan. And she believes the spirits or these fairy folk are at fault. And so the spirits only respond to a bard's music. So she needs Jack to play for the spirits to see if they can help solve the mystery. And of course, as the two of them begin working together, you know, they realize they make better partners than enemies, but more secrets begin to arise about the isle. And so, yeah, so A Fire Endless just continues the story. And yeah, everything's wrapped up by the end. I get asked a lot of questions if there's going to be more. Right now, it's definitely just two books.
So do you, this is not your first duology. Do you just think in that way? I think for us, we're so used to trilogies or longer series where, you know, you with clear story beats, especially with like the second one ending in some sort of darker way to pull it out in book three. How do you see the beats happening in a duology?
Yeah, so it's interesting because it is on my bucket list to write a trilogy one day. I would love to do that, or even a longer series. I'm just like, man, that requires so much planning ahead of time. And again, my problem is I am such a discovery writer. It is so hard for me to think that far ahead.
Yeah.
And I think I would worry if I did a trilogy, that middle book would definitely feel like a middle book. You know, sometimes there's that second book syndrome. where you are setting up a lot of things for the third book. But yeah, no, I think like when I started writing River Enchanted, I honestly thought it was going to be a standalone, but then I really saw like how the book was going to end, and it ends on a big revelation, somewhat of a cliffhanger. So I knew it's like, okay, I need one more book. And again, I think when you spend so much time building a world in the magic system and investing a lot in these characters, like it is nice, in my opinion, to have one more book to continue developing it. Cause I have written standalones as well, and I feel like standalones are very hard, almost in a sense harder than a series, because you are having to create everything and then resolve everything in one book in a very satisfying way, and it not be, especially with young adult, they want to keep your word count a little bit closer to the 100K instead of adult, you get a little bit more. So yeah, I think I just always like very clearly, so I have a River Enchanted is divided into like a 3-act structure. And so at the end of each part, we're having a revelation and the mystery get revealed. And so I kind of saw that book as 1, 2, 3. And then when I was writing Fire Endless, again, I knew where I wanted the series to end. I wasn't exactly sure like how it was going to unfold, which is how I work very, very often. I can see the end. It's kind of this nebulous thing, and I have to just work towards it. But with the Fire Endless, I really thought it was going to be 3-act structure. And I was like, man, something is just not right. Something's not fitting. And then I realized, okay, this is actually a 4-act structure. And then once I figured that out, I think once I can see the structure, the bones of how the book needs to lay, I'm able to like, again, kind of move forward at like a faster pace because I can see how things are organized. So it's interesting to me, like once I figure out, I think those structures of the book, you know, I think that helps a lot as far as like knowing, especially planning a series, like where one book ends and one begins, or, you know, what I'm working towards with each book.
Great. So I want to talk to you about something I read in your bio, which I think will speak to most of the people listening, which is, you know, you at one in 2015, was it, or somewhere around there, you had this view of yourself as like a 70-year-old woman having not followed your writing dream. And that epiphany just got you to buckle down and start working. And that was 2015. And you have, this is your, what, 7th book?
It's my 6th.
6th.
Yeah.
So tell me about that, because I think a lot of people have that feeling of, this is what I want to do, but I'm not sure how to get started. Or they know they want it, but they haven't had the light the fire under them epiphany yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I vividly remember being like a kid, and if you had asked me when I was 8, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would have said, I want to be an author. So from a very early age, like I knew that's what I wanted to do, and spent a lot of hours as a teenager sitting at my desk in my room writing by hand. So I went to college and I studied English because I love reading and writing so much. And of course, I would often get asked, you know, oh, are you planning to teach? When I said, I'm studying English. And I'd be like, I never even crossed my mind to teach. It's like, no, I'm studying this because I just love reading and writing so much. And again, I still had that dream of like being published one day. But I think, of course, going through college and when you are studying English, you're reading and writing a lot for like papers and so I didn't do much. I did take a few creative writing classes in college, which I enjoyed. I think taught me a lot about like critiquing, as far as critiquing other people's work and also receiving critique. But then when I graduated, I got a good job out of college. And so, it took maybe about two or three years that I was working. I was doing the same 8 to 5, 8 to 5, 8 to 5, 8 to 5, just. And I wasn't reading and I wasn't writing. And so I did. I had this moment where I woke up. And it was so strange how like clear it was, because this sounds so cliche, but I was looking at myself in the mirror and I'm like, one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be like 75 years old, if I live that long, and I'm going to be looking back on my life and I'm going to realize that I never took my writing seriously and that I never published a book, and I'm going to regret that. And so I was like, okay, so from this moment on, I need to take it seriously. And in order to do that, I'm going to have to create writing time. I'm going to have to just get started on something. And so even at this time, like, I didn't even have a laptop at the house. Like, I didn't have a computer. And so, but I could take my work laptop home. And so I just decided, it's like, okay, in the evenings, you know, play with my dog, feed the husband, and then I'm going to sit down and I'm going to start working. And then even on the weekends especially were probably like my the best times that I had, you know. So I had Saturday and Sunday where I would sit and try to work as much as I could. But like in the mornings, before work, on lunch breaks, like anytime I could steal away to work on this manuscript, I did it. And of course, this, it was a fantasy idea. And, you know, just full of all, it was like, you know, it wasn't anything extraordinary by any stretch of the imagination, but I finished it. So I was amazed when I finished it. I was like, okay, like, I actually finished this. I think it was like 120,000 words. It was like quite a long book. And, but I finished it. I was like, okay, I have the ability to actually write a full length fantasy novel. It's like, well, let me go back and try to figure out how to revise this, you know, cause it's like, I was starting to think, okay, like I have something under my belt. Like maybe I need to, you know, maybe I could query this project. And so, I also started, doing a lot of research on agents because I knew, that I wanted to take the traditional route. So it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? Like, what's the next step? And I found this very helpful, website called Literary Rambles, where there's basically all these profiles of agents, for middle grade and young adult. So I kind of went under the young adult section and I could see all these agents. So I just basically clicked on their profiles. And it described like what they were looking for, what they represented, what they're not looking for, you know, a couple of like links to like interviews they had done. So that was so helpful that it was already organized. So I kind of just went through the list and pulled like all the agents that represented young adult fantasy. So I started making this running list of them. And then I even kind of did a lot more research, like trying to find interviews with them, like seeing who else do they represent? Like what are the books on their shelves? And so at this time too, I was trying to like, get this story revised. And then that's when I had the idea for The Queen's Rising, and it just hit me like a lightning bolt. And this was the beginning of 2015. And so I think like, because I had just like finished that other book, it was like a trial run. And again, I knew I could do it. So when I sat down to write The Queen's Rising, I was able to draft it fairly quickly. This was over the winter of 2015, and I'm from Georgia, and we had some ice and snow days. And down here, when you have even like an inch of snow, they shut everything down because we just don't have the capacity to like clear the roads and everything. So because I was working out of college, I had all this time off that winter. And so I just spent every moment I could, working on The Queen's Rising. And so after I had it completed, I actually had my sisters read it. They're a lot younger than me. So I'm like, y'all are like my target audience, you know, read this and tell me what you think. And they read it and loved it. And they're like, oh, you need to definitely publish this. And I think because they loved it and were so enthusiastic, it gave me that last little nudge, like, okay, like, I think I'm ready. I think this manuscript has a spark. And I have I've done all this research on agents, and I've done research on how to write a query. And so I decided to just go ahead and do it. And so I'm really glad I did, because I am actually like a very cautious, like reserved, like person. So sometimes I'm like, I can't believe I had the nerve to actually query something. But I'm so glad I did, because I ended up finding the right agent for the project when I did. So yeah, I definitely, you know, looking back, like, I'm glad I had that moment. I think it's easy sometimes to just kind of settle into a routine. But I think, you know, things changed for me when I really just was very dedicated to protecting my writing time. I think that's what really moved it forward for me. And it's not necessarily that I could write every day, because sometimes it's just impossible, especially when you're working a full-time job, if you have mm-hmm. children, you know, if you have a lot going on in your life, like, you know, you just do what you can with what you have. And little by little, a book does come together if you are putting words down on the page.
So I've heard a lot of differences between the YA and the adult markets, which a lot of people wouldn't expect, but the behind the scenes, like the YA authors and everything going on there, it seems terrifying. Have you had any, I don't know, has it seemed any different publishing for adults? I mean, I know the pandemic has changed a lot of things, but did you experience any sort of genre change as you switched over?
You know, no, not too much. I do think sometimes with YA, it feels like there's a sense of urgency. So it's like everything is hinging on the first week that your book comes out. And if it doesn't hit a certain you know, tier, whatever, then it's like they're moving on to the next thing. And I really, really believe a lot of books just need time to breathe, and it's going to take time. I mean, I think word of mouth is one of the most powerful things for a book. So you have someone read it and recommend it to their friend, and they read it and recommend it to their friend. So it can take a while for a book to really get established. And so I think sometimes with YA, I was feeling like I constantly just have to keep producing and keep moving forward because, like I've missed my time or my books have missed their time or missed their chance. And so I think with adult, I haven't necessarily felt that way as much as I did with YA, where I feel like A River Enchanted has definitely had just time to really breathe, and people have been, you know, discovering it all year long. And, you know, the nice thing with that is if they like River Enchanted, then they go and they do go check out your backlist. And mm-hmm. So then those books that, you know, you thought, oh, like, yeah, I remember with I'll pick on Sisters of Sword and Song in particular, because that was my 2020 book. It came out in June of 2020. And it was just, I knew it's like, this book is just, the sales are going to be awful. Like yeah. no one was talking about it. No one was picking it up. I couldn't do any events. I think I had like one virtual event. I mean, again, that was the beginning of virtual events too. We're all trying to figure out like, you know, what is this new landscape like? And I just remember thinking, oh, this book, like no one's going to ever hear about it or discover it. And, but you know, a year later I had Barnes and Noble pick up the paperback for their YA monthly pick for September. And it really, and so again, I had a whole year later. And then when that paperback, of course, you have Barnes and Noble really promoting it for all that month and having it set out, you know, prominently in the bookstore. And that made a huge difference. So, and again, I was like, thank you. It's like kind of gave this book a second chance for readers to find it. So, but yeah, I think, you know, there is a little bit of difference, I think, with YA and adults. And, but yeah, I've definitely really enjoyed the writing on the adult side. I think mainly because I just have, really loved kind of diving deeper into topics and themes that I just hadn't touched on yet in my YA that I, you know, because I'm writing for teens with my mm-hmm. YA novels, my adult, it's just like, again, like the world kind of opens up where I can write about older characters going through things that, you know, teens probably might not want to read about. But
yeah, we have a question in chat. If you have multiple POV characters, do you choose one of them to be the primary POV?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So River Enchanted, again, is my first novel where I have multiple. So I think there's five total, but there's four that are more prominent. And so, but I did, when I was writing the book, Jack was my main, like my main protagonist. So I was trying to really have him like propel the story forward. So we have him returning home in the very beginning. And so, yes, I really saw him as like the main character. And I didn't have Adara's point of view at all in the book, but it was feedback that I got like, hey, like, I think we either need to include her point of view so readers can know what's going on in her mind, or you need to build her up completely, like where we have no idea what's going on. And so I did want readers to be able to connect with her. So I actually brought her point of view in. So I think the first draft, I just had Jack, Sidra, and Torin. And then I brought in Adara and Frey in later revisions. But yeah, I think it does help to have one that's kind of like your primary character. Again, that's kind of propelling things forward. At least that's, yeah, it was very helpful for me to structure it that way.
Going back to you being very focused and determined to start your career, is there anything you know now that you would have told yourself not to do or to do that you didn't do? I'm trying to let people get the absolute full benefit from your pretty remarkable mm-hmm. experience.
Yeah, so I think if I could go back, one thing I wish I had done better at is making connections with other authors, like even before like the publishing phase. So everything happened really quickly for me, which is very unusual. So I sent three queries out because that's all I can handle. I'm so anxious about this. And if my query is bad, like if my query isn't good, I don't want to blow my whole batch of agents on this bad query. So let me just send three out. And again, I felt like I just like melted off my chair the moment I sent them. Like, I can't believe I did that. And so two immediately kind of came back as rejections. But then one, Susie, was like, hey, this sounds great. Please send me your full manuscript. And I was so excited about it. So I sent the full manuscript to her, and it was like a 3-month wait. So, I mean, it can take an agent a while because it goes into their queue. And then, and again, this is like before COVID. I think even after COVID, it's even like longer, which is so hard to wait. And my plans were to keep sending queries out during that time. And I just had this feeling, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait and see what Susie says. And so she had no idea. She had the manuscript exclusively. And, but I do wish that I had, so then it took her about 3 months, and then she read and she offered, to represent me. So again, she had no idea she was the only one. cause I was like, you know, I just have this feeling in my gut. And then, we went on submission with the book about a month later, and it sold very quickly. So I honestly had like no time to really like process or even learn. Like, I was even like, how does submission work? Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't even exactly sure how it worked. And then the offer came in. So it just happened extremely fast. And I wish that I had been able to, again, like, know how to find other authors who were also going through the querying stage, and like, go ahead and make friendship and connections with other writers early on. Because I feel like I missed out on a lot of that camaraderie of when you are all going through that. And then, you know, you've all been, even like having like a critique partner, like I did not find a good critique partner until a little bit later. And again, just putting yourself out there, I think it's so hard to do, especially I think online sometimes, because or trying to forge friendships all online when you haven't really met someone, it can feel a little scary. Like, am I going to connect with this person? Are they going to like my writing? Are we going to be a good match for critique partners? But I do wish, I was like, oh man, I should have put myself out there more to help like make relationships in the very beginning, because I mean, it can be very lonely. And again, like you're talking about rejections, like I'm glad you like actually collect them as like proof of like, we are all like working towards something. And this is part of it when you are trying to write, that you will have rejections. And so, I think it's just nice to have a community. And I feel like mine came a little bit late, but again, it's because I felt just very shy and reserved and did not put myself out there. Like, I guess I was scared to put myself out there. I don't know. I felt like, I didn't even know where to find, my writing community. And then, but I know people have found like connected through like Twitter and Instagram and, things like that. So I have no idea if that makes any sense, because I feel like I'm just like rambling.
No, it does. It does. It is important to find, your community. I often talk about finding, you know, the benefit of science fiction fantasy conventions, because it's invaluable networking. And even if you find it difficult because you're shy, it's invaluable. It's like, yeah, you don't have to go, but it is definitely a good idea if you can. The pandemic allowed for more of that because a lot of cons went virtual. For me, it was harder to hang out. I mean, it was hard to get my brain around virtual conventions for me, but I liked that they were there, and they were giving a lot of them put a thought into creating virtual spaces for people to hang out. And I think that was really a useful thing. But yeah, the networking and just finding your own community, finding people who are around the same point in their career as you is very, very powerful. If you guys have any more questions for Rebecca, put them in the chat. What are you working on now?
So I am working on the sequel to Divine Rivals. So Divine Rivals is my next YA coming out April 4th. And so I'm currently working on that sequel. And it's another duology, by the way. So I'm definitely finding it's just interesting, I think, with a second book that's wrapping everything up, just like, it can feel very like hard. Cause I'm like, okay, again, where am I heading, and how am I going to wrap all of this up in a very like satisfying way, for my readers. But yes, I'm currently on deadline for that. So I'm in like the thick of that manuscript.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else you would like to tell beginning writers, that you haven't already mentioned, or anything you wished I would have asked you that I haven't mentioned?
You know, I think one of the best things I have learned, with just releasing my book number 6 is that, and I, you know, I could actually just like lined up all my books to like look at all of them. And I'm like, I'm just, you know, I'm really happy that I wrote books that I wanted to read and that I love. And I think sometimes if you're looking at trends or, you know, you feel like, oh, I have to write this, you know, in order to get published. But I think there's something so powerful in writing what you are passionate about, a story that you wish that you could, you know, if you're walking through the bookstore and you saw it on the shelf and you pulled off the shelf, like,
yeah,
like your heart would just like, oh man, this is what I've been looking for. So to always write books that, you know, stories that you want to write, like don't feel pressured to write something that you're not passionate about, because I do think when that book does go off into the world, and then you do have people who read it and hate it, you know, and maybe even tag you in the things you did wrong. You just like, you know, it just wasn't for you. I wrote a book for me, and there are a lot of other readers who also have the same taste as me, and it just wasn't written for you, and that's okay. But I also think, like, one of the things that I think that helped me too is, like, I remember very clearly when I read Uprooted by Naomi Novik for the mm-hmm. first time, I was like completely just like, wow, like I loved it from like the first sentence. I was completely just swept away by that book. And then as soon as I finished it, I was like, okay, let me go back and reread it again. And this time, let me read it with a very like analytical eye, where I'm asking myself, okay, what did she do that like hooked me? Like, mm-hmm. how did she structure this first chapter? Like, how does she structure the whole book? You know, just like really focusing on those storytelling beats. And so I do think there's something really powerful in just learning how to be a writer just from reading a lot. And again, looking at books that you really love and examining them and asking questions like that. So you can kind of learn from the people you admire and, mm-hmm. and kind of take that into your own work.
Shard says, is there such a thing as too many POVs, even if the story is focusing on one character, just getting different outsiders' point of view of them?
You know, I mean, if it works, it works, right? I mean, I do think there's some readers who don't like too many points of view, because they think you could run the risk of having too many, and then a reader's like, I don't know who... It just feels like they can't really understand all the, like, why do we have all these POVs? I think it does, in a sense, has to be justified as why you are bringing other POVs in.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally do love, especially like a fantasy epic where we have multiple points of view, because I do think it's a very powerful way to build a story because you're not limited to one person or one character. So yeah, I honestly think it's just something. And again, I'm thinking of Naomi Novik again with Spinning Silver. Like, I don't know how many points of view she had, but it was like quite a few points of view that definitely kind of like cycled through that whole book. And I thought she did that like very, very well, even with them being in first person, which is very tricky to make feel very distinct. So yeah, I think, you know, that's something, if you are working on a book that has multiple POVs, something you could play around with and just see, like, you know, do I need these POVs? Do I need more? Like, you know, you want to make sure you're still, I guess, keeping like a close, like, grip on what the story, like, what is the goal of the story? You know, so you're not getting too much out, like building this huge forest and losing your path, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think that is it for me. Rebecca, you've been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for being on the show and giving us your wisdom and your experience, because I think a lot of people could get a lot out of what you have accomplished. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And the latest book is Fire Endless. It's the second of a duology, the first one being A River Enchanted, both of them available now. That did not go into the chat. Rebecca can be found at RebeccaRossAuthor.com. Is that right?
Yes.
And is any social media you want to tell us about?
Yes. So I am most active on Instagram. So you can find me at Becca J. Ross there. And that's where like most of all my news breaks first is Instagram. So I've just kind of had to decide like which platform do mm-hmm. I like the most and just kind of, pour most of my time there. So I do have a Twitter and Facebook that is just mainly just for updates, but I'm still pretty bad at update or, you know, keeping like news there. So mm-hmm. definitely Instagram.
Well, excellent. And you can find me and my stuff at merverse.com. I stream Monday through Thursday on Twitch at twitch.tv/mightymur, and you can help out with the podcast by supporting at the Patreon, which is patreon.com/mightymur. And I'll probably stream a little bit next week. I'm not sure what I'll be streaming, but I'll probably just chill, hang out stuff. And thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, everybody in chat. And we will see you next time. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at Murverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. Doctor Who.